Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Yesterday, the governor of Ohio traveled all the way to Steubenville to give a State of the State address, his second since becoming governor. Joining us now to talk about that is Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And also Laura Bischoff, correspondent for the Dayton Daily News.
And thanks for having me, Ann.
And Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
If you have a question or comment for our panel, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So within the first 5 minutes of his second State of the State address this year in Steubenville, some 150 miles east of Columbus, Governor Kasich discussed early education, and he had an announcement.
You know, we got good news. Ohio just received a $70 million grant. We were the fifth best in the country, and we're going to be able to use that money and apply it to early education, making it work and making it better across the state of Ohio for the good of our children. And it's fantastic news.
Okay, the thing is, that wasn't news. In fact, there wasn't much news at all. Joining us to talk about that, as I said before, Laura Bischoff, Columbus State House reporter for the Dayton Daily News. Laura? Disagree? Agree?
Well,
news?
I think that the governor gave a progress report on what he's done right. In 2011. He had a really aggressive agenda, of course, and he sort of kind of ticked through all the things that he's been working on, like Medicaid policy reforms, Jobs Ohio, prescription drug abuse, the pill mill bill.
It sounded like a lot of his end of the year State House
kind
press
of
wrap up.
Right. And he only foreshadowed a few things that he wants to work on, like, you know, he talked about Cleveland having their big reform, education reform plan, and that he wants to look to there and also to schools like Wells Academy in Steubenville, where he held the speech as blueprints of, you know, how they can change and revamp public education. I think that this year we're going to have some sort of change in school funding formula because it really wasn't fully developed in the current budget. So, you know, he sort of talked about that and also workforce training and the need for community colleges and
well, not just don't rush through all of it too fast.
I don't,
because,
yeah.
You know.
Well, and he did mention collateral sanctions, which, you know, was the only bill. Well, there was a bill or two that he talked about wanting to move forward on. But if we remember, the State of the State is really an address to the legislature. Typically, traditionally, it is a governor revisiting very quickly the past year, talking about the state of the state, where are we, and then setting forth the legislative agenda. It simply didn't happen yesterday.
No, the first 60 minutes of the 83-minute speech was spent on looking back, and then he spent some time giving out some courage awards and doing some other things. Mm-hmm. There was very little in terms of prospective looking forward.
Yeah, I think the speech in the past has been a policy speech. Maybe not a whole lot of new ground broken, but certainly governors would lay out what they wanted to do and be real specific about it. I mean, you can think back to, say, Governor Taft's tax reforms back in 2005. I don't think anybody was surprised by what he was saying, but that was a time where he laid it all out very clearly and in a concise form. We didn't get that in the speech. I don't think we got anything that was specifically laid out. Now, I think some of that is because I don't think this year is going to be nearly as aggressive
well,
as last year.
It's not a state budget year, spending budget year.
But there's still an opportunity to lay out policy and to talk about what he might want to do going forward. We heard a couple of little things, but I think, you know, this is going to be a year where you're not going to see a whole lot of big aggressive things happening. The entire House and half the Senate is up for election. So, you know, I think it's not going to be anywhere near what it was in 2011.
Well, it's always cyclical, but this seemed to stand out as a State of the State address among the many I've heard before. That really was very short on looking forward.
I think,
Julie?
My take on that is that John Kasich has a difficult time keeping secrets. He talks a lot. He talks all around the state, and he leaks out little bits of it himself. And when his big speeches come around, we've already heard most of it and usually written about most of it.
He even said a few days ago, though, that there were going to be some surprises.
I guess the surprise is that there were no surprises.
Well, I think the Courage Awards may have been what he was referring to, at least in terms of something different, something not seen before in a previous speech, for a governor to create a category of awards and actually present them to the people. I mean, that was an emotional high point of the speech, and he even got choked up over that. But I think part of the issue, too, is that the governor doesn't usually make big announcements in big forums like this. I mean, I think he makes announcements in press conferences and small, you know, things like this. These big speeches seem to be a lot more rehashing of what we've already heard. I mean, we were sitting there in our row, you know, tweeting the whole time, and, you know, you'd see the joke about fracking and the joke about foreigners being from West Virginia and Kentucky. You know, we'd all heard these things before.
The wackadoodles from California.
We've heard these before because we cover the governor. But this was a new audience to some, you know, some of the people in the audience were new. And so I think he kind of, you know, talks about those kinds of things as an opportunity to bring them out again. But unfortunately, most of the audience in that speech were, you know, us and the lawmakers and his cabinet. We've all heard some of these things before. And if we were waiting for anything new, there just really wasn't anything new.
Once again, we're talking about the governor's State of the State address yesterday in Steubenville. If you have a question or comment for our guests, we welcome them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. My guests, Julie Carr Smythe with the Associated Press, Karen Kassler with the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and Laura Bischoff with the Dayton Daily News. Let's listen to some more of the speech right now. Jobs is an important issue across the country and in Ohio, of course. And in his speech, Governor Kasich talked about efforts to add jobs.
Ohio is the number one job creator in the Midwest today as we sit here. Number one. We're the number nine job creator in America, from 48 to 9 in 1 year.
Okay, once again, he talked about that at the year-end wrap-up, didn't he? Something to that effect?
I've heard that stat before, sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, again, that was in the section of the speech that was really revisiting the accomplishments of his first year.
Well, that's most of the speech, so most of what I'm going to talk about is that. But those statistics are accurate.
That, as far as I know, they are, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of ways to define job creation, and I know that, you know, there are some questions around what is a created job, what is a retained job. There's been some criticism that he moved jobs, for example. Let's talk about Bob Evans, moving Bob Evans from Columbus to New Albany, a neighboring
community. And counted those jobs?
Community. And he would have counted those as retained jobs because he said that those were going to move to Texas, which, you know, the evidence of that is really impossible to garner because it didn't happen.
Also, I think the Democrats, the main criticism that they had of the speech, even before the speech even began, Chris Redfern had a press conference on this, the Ohio Democratic Party chairman, is that, you know, he's taking credit for a reviving economy when, in fact, his policies haven't been in place long enough to really take effect, and that the credit goes to Barack Obama and Ted Strickland and others who supported the auto bailout.
He specifically mentioned the auto industry.
Right, many times. He talked about Ford and GM and Chrysler and Honda. But he, you know, the Democrats say, look, those are policies that were pushed for aggressively by the Democrats and opposed largely by Republicans, and yet those are the ones that are really paying dividends now, and that the credit is due to them. So, you know, it's really difficult to assign credit and blame. But in general, the guy who's in office gets blamed when the economy's going badly and gets the credit when it's going well.
And they take the credit.
Oh, absolutely. And they try to dodge the blame, too.
Now, he specifically, you said, opposed the bailout for GM.
Well, you know, I don't know that he's, you know, there's like little snippets of things that sort of indicate that he wasn't real keen on it. But I don't know that there's a statement out there on the record where he says, this is a bad idea, don't do it.
And that's what I agree. I agree with that. Everything that I've seen has been suggesting that he didn't like the idea, that he worried that it was, you know, going to lead to further problems down the road. But Certainly the Democrats have been pointing to him and saying he wasn't supportive. And so how should he be taking credit for the revitalization of the American auto industry in Ohio if he wasn't completely on board with supporting the bailout?
They put out two press releases following the state address yesterday, right? One was on the awards.
Yes.
That detailed the people that he was talking about. Now, that's something that usually they give you just beforehand so that you know who they're talking about when they're talking about it.
Because these people were all sitting, and radio listeners have to envision this, they were all sitting on the stage. And
for no apparent reason.
We had no idea. I mean, I think I recognize the woman.
Teresa Flores.
Right, because yeah. She's been visible before, and I think one
in
of the
human
other,
trafficking, yeah.
Yeah, and the woman with the whose son died of prescription drug abuse, I've seen her around. But why were they on stage? What's going on with this? So you're right. It's the kind of thing that normally we get a preview of so that we can better explain, hey, there's these people up there and this is what we're expecting will happen.
And even on the print side, you know, to be able to spell their names and to say and to write something or tweet
with,
something.
With the speed
or,
with which reporters are expected to produce copy nowadays. Yeah. I mean, things were coming out minutes after.
Right. And I mean, we basically had to summarize who the winners were because we didn't have any name spellings or anything like that to go on. But I will say that he used the Courage Awards, I think, to highlight some of his agenda. I think that the fact that he took a victim of this prescription painkiller situation, which he has really taken as a priority in his first year, and then dovetailed that into the fact that he wants to launch a war on human trafficking and child sex abuse. He was, again, emotional when he talked about how some of these children aren't much older than his own twin daughters.
But Teresa Federer has been working on the war against human trafficking and child sex abuse for a long time. That's
sure,
not a new
but,
war.
But I think that a Republican governor saying, I'm going to work with Democrats on right. that was worth mentioning.
Tell me about what they said in the press release about the Courage Awards. What's the overall intent beyond underscoring parts of his agenda? Because he said he wants it to go on and on and on for a long time.
Well, we can tell you that it says it was... it doesn't say what they're intended for.
Okay, I wondered because he didn't really say that yesterday in the speech. And
I think it's kind of a legacy thing maybe already, you know, the kind of thing that he hopes will continue, that other governors will pick up on as being, you know, a non-political thing. I mean, he gets a lot of criticism for being political, even though he says he's non-political. He made a couple of comments during the speech about partisanship and that sort of thing, and right. You can debate that. But I think this is the kind of thing that he would want to stand as an accomplishment that he had that you can look at and say this was non-political. This is an opportunity, like Julie said, for a governor in the future, and even as he's doing here, to highlight accomplishments using real people and using people who are working in these fields who are making a difference.
Well, and I just wanted to say, to quote my favorite movie, Broadcast News, it was very presidential what he did. And it's not, I don't think it's... an irony that he is trying to do something that the president already has a Courage Award. He even mentioned that this GI the fallen GI who he was honoring already had a Medal of Honor from the United States, and he wanted to honor him once again. So, you know, I think it is a legacy thing.
It is a legacy thing, and it did sound presidential, but calling all Californians wackadoodles did not. So we can get back to that when we return. We're talking about these governor's State of the State address yesterday in Steubenville. If you have a question or comment for our panel, Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press, Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What did you think? We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The This is 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to join All Sides with Ann Fisher for a special live broadcast on location at WOSU at COSI. Be a part of the studio audience on Tuesday, February 14th from 10 until noon. In the first hour, we'll discuss the current challenges facing Columbus's historic neighborhood, Franklinton. And then in the second hour, we'll celebrate Columbus's bicentennial with Mayor Michael Coleman and a panel. Join All Sides at WOSU at COSI on Tuesday, February 14th from 10 until noon.
Support for 89.7 comes from Clintonville Academy, offering college prep education for pre-kindergarten through 8th grades and hosting an open house on Sunday, February 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. with faculty and tours available. Details at ClintonvilleAcademy.org.
30 degrees in downtown Columbus with a little snow expected today, less than an inch of accumulation, and a high of 35 this afternoon. Clouds tonight, a low of 21, sunshine for Thursday, and a high of 39 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the governor's State of the State address. John Kasich decided in a historic move to switch venues for the State of the State from the usual State House, which they spent thousands of dollars wiring up just a few years ago for these kinds of events, and to move it to Steubenville, to a school, a high-performing school, or the highest, most high-functioning, highest-performing elementary school in the state, Wells Academy. Joining me now to talk about that were some people who were actually there. Laura Bischoff, she's with the Dayton Daily News. Karen Kassler with the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. And Julie Carr-Smythe with the Associated Press. So I, you know, joked about a few things that he said yesterday, but there were a lot of things. He's got quite a folksy way of speaking, doesn't he, Laura?
Yes, and I think it's very, very John Kasich. But and you kind of have to follow his speeches to sort of get it. But he did have some sort of off-the-wall things. He mentioned a cartoon that talked about how is it that John Kasich snagged that hot wife. He referred to his wife as hot. He implied that God is the lobbyist for poor people. He referred to Californians as wackadoodles. He talked about his Uncle George and Uncle Steve. He urged people to hug the nerd kids. He talked about seeing Jerry Seinfeld in a vision with Armin Budish,
right,
and
right,
Bill Batchelder. Yep. He talked about receiving a hug from State Senator Shirley Smith, a Democrat from Cleveland, and how that made him believe in God.
Right.
And he told Gordon Gee to clean the coal and burn it, and Battelle, clean the coal and burn it. And then he also talked a little bit about non-blue-tongued cows.
Yeah, the blue-tongued cows are non-blue-tongued cows.
We're exporting to Turkey. But again, there was no context. You're kind of like, well, what was that all about?
Well, and I think he also does these shout-outs during the speech. He'll shout out somebody's name and Dale over here and
practically, you know, have a Democrat in the House.
Yeah, and it's a weird, if you're not used to it, it's
and
a weird style.
And if you don't
style.
Know who he's talking about.
And that's really key, I think, too, is I think he calls out people's names in an attempt to bring them into the speech. But if you're just listening and you have no idea who these people are, it's very confusing and
disorienting.
Well, and you could almost say it's impolite if you say the one state office holder who he recognized and who stood to applause was Jennifer Bruner. He never thanked, as far
a
as
Democrat,
I could recall,
of course,
he never
former
thanked
Secretary
the legislators
State
who were sitting on the stage. He never welcomed anybody.
Hardcore Democrat. Yeah, his whole thank you for letting me be here thing was very short. Sometimes they go on and on and on, granted, but you didn't know who these people were up on stage. Jennifer Bruner, of course, hardcore Democrat, former Secretary of State for the state of Ohio, and now she's leading a commission to look at sentencing.
Collateral sanctions, which is where, you know, you get out of prison and you have all these extra punishments that prohibit you from taking other jobs.
Right.
But and the idea of thanking the legislators for letting him be there, I mean, they actually had to pass resolutions to move the joint session from the State House to Steubenville. And it didn't go over exactly as well as maybe he had hoped, because there were some lawmakers, including a couple of Republicans, who voted against this move because they were concerned about the cost and some other issues. And so he probably should have thanked them for moving, since maybe they didn't want to go.
Well, someone he is clearly enamored with, Governor Kasich mentioned Ohio State President Gordon Gee several times during his speech. Someone, I think, counted four or five, maybe six times. And in this clip, he talks about Gordon Gee's resume and announces an initiative that Gordon Gee will take charge of.
What we're going to do is God bless Gordon. Think about this guy. I mean, he's the University of Colorado. He's Ohio State. He's Brown. He's Vanderbilt. He's back West Virginia, back at Ohio State. That's incredible. Incredible resume. Gordon, I don't know if it's greater because they wanted to get rid of you, but it's pretty darn good. Anyway, the fact of the matter is I've asked him to get the university presidents together, and they're going to come with a capital bill for the first time in our history that doesn't have universities just going for themselves.
Okay, so again, that's not news. We've heard it. He's talked about that before, but Gordon Gee, my goodness.
Yeah, I talked to Gordon Gee right afterwards during our live
still
broadcast.
Blushing or?
He was a little, smiley, I guess, about this in the sense of getting more shout outs than anybody else. But I think he's got a mammoth task ahead of him. I mean, how in the world do you get university presidents who have been over the years working for their universities and for the betterment of their universities and looking at what they can get to attract more students to their own schools? How do you get them to work together so it's working within the system? And I think a lot of universities maybe look at Ohio State as being the place that gets everything, and here's the guy who's going to lead everybody in that. I just think it's going to be a really challenging task for him to try to do this.
And I talked to Democratic State Senator Mike Skindle afterward, and he said he was a little concerned about this arrangement. Why would Gordon Gee not be self-interested in leading such a task force? And where exactly is the Chancellor of Higher Education in all this? I have heard that Jim Pietro has had some health issues, so perhaps Kasich is bringing President Gee in to handle what duties which should fall to him. I'm not sure.
Well, I also think that Jim Pietro has been working on the enterprise plan for universities. That's been one of his focuses. So I think
the kind of the privatization of their research, scientific research, and that sort of thing, and commercializing things at the.
Well, and it's also the idea of taking away some regulations that universities have, but giving them a little bit more freedom, but also taking away a little bit of money that is attached to those regulations.
Dan, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Well, thanks, Sam. Great show.
Thank you.
I just have a few general impressions. I listened to most of it yesterday, and my first impression was it sounded an awful lot like a Democrat. And maybe that was just due to the lack of confrontation, kind of the post-Senate Bill 5 stuff going on. The other impression was when you talked about bipartisanship being against, child slavery and stuff like that. Boy, that's a real low bar. It's like, would Democrats not be in favor of working on that? I think they would. But then this, your comments and your guest comments about the taking credit for the auto industry, I guess my feeling on that is, notwithstanding his, dancing around or hedging around the issue, it is kind of wrong for him to take credit for the benefits of that, because his party certainly is still campaigning actively against those kind of initiatives. And as a party, they think it's tantamount to socialism. And so all those things together, I was just kind of chagrined as a Democrat, I guess, that he's taking credit for stuff that clearly was at least largely the result of the other party's doing.
Well, the human trafficking thing, it is a Democrat, Democratic State Representative Teresa Fetter, who was a state senator, who you pointed out, Ann, earlier, has been working on the human trafficking thing for years.
Absolutely. With Teresa Flores.
With Teresa Flores, one of the governor's Courage Award winners. But it's kind of one of those issues, it seems like, that's with prison sentencing reform. This idea that it's been kicked around for a while and nothing's been done about it. I think the governor's kind of taken it as a charge to maybe get something done about it. But then there's also the issue of what can be done about it without pulling in, some federal money and some federal rules and everything. It's one of those problems that's very, very big, and it's hard to get your arms around, I think.
Well, and I think it's good news in terms of bipartisanship in this state, because if we look at recent developments, post-Senate Bill 5 developments at the legislature, The governor has needed Democratic support on a couple of things, including moving this speech.
Which he received.
Right. And I think that Democrats are cautiously supportive of fracking, a lot of them. And
because their districts are located, many of them, it's
right.
largely
I mean, it's
Democratic district area.
Right, a very blue section of the state, right. A lot of manufacturing. So they don't want to completely reject that. And so the economic agenda going forward is a bipartisan one in some respects.
Well, Dan, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. We have a couple emails, one from Christina in Dublin. She wondered, who were the We Won't Be Silent people? Of course, those were the hecklers and the protesters in and outside of the auditorium. Karen Kessler?
It's interesting because I think one of the reasons the speech got moved was last year. And I don't know if folks remember this, but there was a huge protest during the State of the State in the rotunda. You could hear it through the heavy wooden doors. There were some people who got into
about Senate Bill 5.
Yes, who right. got into the House gallery and were shouting a little bit during the speech. And I think part of the point to take it on the road may have been to avoid some of the protesting that was going on. That did not happen. There were protesters outside who had been shouting. A couple of them got in. And I talked to some folks who said that they stood in line right around the same group of people, and they were searched just like everybody else and got in. And I think they just waited for their opportunity to yell something. And these are people, if they were with the group of folks who were outside, they were, you know, protesting fracking and protesting the environmental concerns about it.
And Senate Bill 5 as
yes,
well.
Sure.
Continuing to
But I think, you know, and when watching the speech, and I actually watched some of it back last night because I'm crazy or something. I don't know, since I actually relived the speech again later after seeing it the first time. But you could see a change in the governor. The first time he was interrupted by the protesters, he was, I think, fairly comfortable with that. He gave a real good, you know, response and got everybody standing who supported him standing up and applauding. But then as they kept interrupting him, I think it threw him off his game and threw him off the speech. He started to falter a little bit.
He also sped up.
Yes, he did, absolutely.
He started, I think he kind of realized, oh, I better wrap up or this could get out of hand. And what I think what the hecklers did.
After an almost
hour,
historically.
It was past the hour mark, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that the hecklers, I don't know if this was part of a coordinated strategy, there was probably half a dozen or so of them, and one would start yelling out and then get yanked out, and then the next one would start yelling out and get yanked out.
There were nine total who were yanked out. But yeah, you're right. There was kind of like this domino effect.
They staggered it.
Yeah.
But to the list, here's one thing about doing it where, you know, the venue, they weren't able to pan the audience like they usually do during a State of the State, which I thought was a loss. I mean, to somebody, if you're just watching on television, listening on the radio, it wouldn't make any difference. But be that as it may, either way, because of that, it sounded like the same person over and over and over again. And finally, someone said, "Why don't they get rid of that? You know, why is that person?"
Yeah, I was sitting on an aisle, and I could actually see them escorting.
But it was several people.
Yes, it was several people, men and women both, who were escorted out, and just as
and it was coming from different portions of the auditorium.
Yes.
So
all upstairs, though. I don't think
it was the peanut gallery.
They had to be the peanut gallery because that's where the free tickets came from and that kind of thing.
The last one came from the press section, though.
Really?
I did not.
I mean, not from the press, but there
right
was
right behind
a,
us.
From, it was on the main floor.
Okay. Well, let's talk about
no one from the press.
No one from the press.
The State of the State
I want to talk about how the press, you know, what the situation was there. But anyways, let's talk about the fracking, since that was what generated the protests. As expected, Governor Kasich did talk about fracking, which is an important topic for the state and for the city of Steubenville, the whole region there. He says fracking can occur, but it must be done the right way.
You cannot degrade the environment at the same time you're producing this industry. It is not acceptable, and it's not a false choice. The biggest companies know that you need to have tough environmental rules. They can't be complicated, they can't be over the top, but we need to have them, because we can't have some yahoo come into this state and damage this whole industry because they're irresponsible.
I don't know if that was before or after he started talking about foreigners working in Ohio and kind of joking, about people from West Virginia and Michigan and that sort of thing. But anything new there at all?
No, okay. I don't think so. I do think that he's serious about that, and I think he showed that when he put the moratorium on the deep yep. injection drilling up in Youngstown after those earthquakes.
The New Year's Eve earthquake.
Right. I mean, they're still studying exactly what caused those, but I do think that he wanted to send a message and did so pretty quickly. So, you know, I think he's serious about that. It doesn't look good, and it can't sustain itself if it is damaging the environment.
Tom and Marion, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Good morning. I have a comment. I was absolutely fatigued after watching Governor's speech for an hour. You know, they sell videos for people doing their daily exercises at home. I think doing a workout, watching the governor, following it, his every move would do the trick.
Okay. He has a lot of energy, and his speech definitely shows that he's thinking while he's speaking.
And, when he was shaking the podium
shaking
at one
around,
time,
moving around and
channeling somebody.
Well, I think the idea, you know, he does like to pace a lot. I mean, I recall his speech where he unveiled his budget during his town hall style meeting, and it was a lot of moving around and standing up and shaking hands and doing all this and pointing at people and everything. And it is, he's not the standard kind of robotic person that some politicians can be.
Yeah, I think standing behind a podium is, you know, he would prefer to wander the stage.
Thanks, Tom, for that observation. Appreciate it. 614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call and comment, you're more than welcome. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, as did Angel. She writes, I found it disturbing that the speech was preceded by the singing of a gospel song. I don't understand the confusion about separation of church and state. Some people do not appreciate other people's beliefs being forced upon them, and I'm one of them for sure.
Well, you know, it's tradition to start the Ohio House and Senate sessions with a prayer. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's a Christian prayer. Sometimes it's more non-denominational. And the governor picked, I think, what's her name, Vernetha Prather to sing his, I think it's probably his favorite hymn, and he has had her sing at other events previously, and
well, like inaugural type events, mm-hmm. those kinds of things,
right.
And public school, some people might.
Well, like Laura says, though, I mean, it is a joint session of the legislature, and it is traditional to open it with.
So
it
could
some
have replaced
kind of
a prayer. So,
right.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
He did, though, you know, he had his spiritual advisor with him, we were told, and he takes his faith very seriously, and he sprinkled references to God and religion through the speech. That's who John Kasich is. It's to be expected.
And looking at the program from yesterday's speech, actually the song appears to do just that, replace a prayer. It says invocation, which is the prayer, mm-hmm. and it's Vernetha Prather during the vocals. So, you know, it's for people who aren't used to it, it is a little strange. And it was one of those kind of events that, you know, are often covered up when we do these live broadcasts of this event. You know, this is kind of the pomp and circumstance that we try to just move on from so that we can bring you the speech. And so, unfortunately, things were running so late that a lot of people heard this who may not normally have heard it, because we were trying to time things, at least in our broadcast, to just get you right to the
speech.
Finally,
someone was doing something. And so
the line
was 27
security,
minutes late, by the way.
The
yeah.
security to get in was fairly lengthy. I mean, everybody was getting searched, and so it took a while for everybody to get in and find their seats. And so by the time the governor actually got on the stage, yeah, you're right, it was 25, 27 minutes. And that was pretty late for getting started for a speech that was supposed to start, or at least the session was supposed to start at 1.
We are going to take a break. We will be back in promptly, I think, 60 seconds or something like that. So don't go away. We'll continue our conversation about the governor's State of the State address yesterday in Steubenville. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Join Kappa, WOSU, and Capital Crossroads SID for a special screening of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton Downtown, at the Ohio Theater on Tuesday, February 14th. The program begins with the Ohio Mighty Morgan organ pre-show at 11:30 a.m. Pre-sale tickets include a fresh box lunch and the chance to win tickets to the Broadway series production of Memphis. For tickets to the screening, call Kappa at 614-469-0939 or visit columbusneighborhoods.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins with the Blue Men Group. You will hear from three Blue Men known for their multimedia performances. And also in the second hour, how to prevent and reverse heart disease in women. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher, Hour 2 at 11 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences, presenting the Ruby Elzey story at the Lincoln Theater on Saturday, February 11th. School of Music students perform selections from the trailblazing soprano's career. Music.osu.edu.
A little bit of snow expected today, less than an inch of additional accumulation, a high of 35. Clouds tonight, a low of 21. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Governor's State of the State address yesterday. If you have a question or comment for us, we welcome them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you heard or watched the address yesterday, we'd love to hear what your comments are, what your observations were. Our guest today, Laura Bischoff with the Dayton Daily News. Laura, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Karen, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
And Julie Carr-Smythe with the Associated Press. Julie, thanks for joining us again.
Happy to be here.
614-292-8513 is that number to call. Love to know what your impressions were yesterday. I read somewhere someone received an email at 9:44 last night that the governor's office had produced the
transcript.
Mm-hmm. And someone said, I feel bad for the person who transcribed it. I mean, we can just talk a little bit about style. It seems like the whole conversation's in a way been about his style. But if you look through the transcript, it's amazing.
They did the same thing last year. Yeah.
It runs 23 pages. There was a woman in the press filing area who was doing the transcription, and I'm not sure what time she left.
I don't know either.
But these are word for word transcriptions because
so you got the no's and the likes and
exactly.
All
that. And you know, it's been said several times that the governor doesn't use a prepared speech. I mean, that's obvious when you were listening to
sometimes
this.
Sometimes it looked like he was reading script though.
He's got note cards and he's got, you know, an outline, but he certainly doesn't use a teleprompter. He jokes about that and everything. But this is definitely there's a lot of ad lib in what he does. And so I think, you know, when he tells us he doesn't know how long the speech is going to be, but it's going to be a long speech, I don't think he honestly knows. I think he kind of comes up with things on the spot and tells these stories and shouts out to these people and wants to spend time doing this and everything. And it's just, it makes for an hour and 23 minute speech sometimes.
Yeah, and sometimes one that gives short shrift to the things that he, I think, hoped to focus on yesterday, which were the final third. I mean, I think where we've come from, where we are now, and where we are going, we're supposed to be the sections of the speech. And I just think that the last section really got rushed, and it was well past the 60-minute mark.
I think you're right. And some people had said the same kind of thing about his year-end press conference that went on for about 2 hours, the idea that it could have been done in a more structured way that could have really highlighted these points. Here's what I did, bullet point 1, 2, 3. But that's not the way that he speaks. That's not the way that he presents things.
Education issues were sort of scattered all through it. And one example of that was when Governor Kasich talked about manufacturing jobs and how they're growing in Ohio and how children should be encouraged to pursue jobs in this industry.
Moms and dads, stop telling your kids that they shouldn't try to get a job in manufacturing. Manufacturing is coming back. Encourage your people, your kids. If God made them to make things, let them make things. It's coming back because of our workforce, because of our location, because of our ability to move things. It's coming back to Ohio.
Okay, and then at another point in time, he talked about how we have to work harder to keep kids in school and to keep, particularly in high school and community colleges and that sort of thing. And I wasn't sure if there was a mixed message there, because maybe manufacturing jobs are requiring more education, certainly, but...
And he did make that point in the speech. He said, okay, you know, it's not, you can't drop out of high school and then just go down to the steel mill and pick up a job, that manufacturing is much more technologically advanced, and that and kids do need to get at least a high school diploma.
And he mentioned also at some point that he wants to see vocational education brought back with gusto. And I think all this is reaction to what we know about Ohio, which is, I believe we have a 25% college graduation rate. We have a lot of unemployed people. It's better now than it was a year ago. It went from 9.5% unemployment to 8.1% in his first year. But most of those jobs, and I think the aim that he's making is in manufacturing.
And it's interesting because it's a departure from what we had heard for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. We talked about the core curriculum, and that was passed to make sure kids had, who were going to college, had specific courses that they were achieving and going through. And you know, the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and the focus on that. And so this is a kind of a move away from that. I mean, it brings in some elements of that, but it, you know, the whole conversation for the longest time talked about college and talked about high-tech jobs and everything. And I think he's kind of turning that to say that there are other jobs that are available that are still high-tech, but not the same, that require a four-year college degree.
That's, I mean, it's intriguing. And it's a difficult call to make as a governor, because
it's a difficult call to make as a parent.
As a parent.
You're talking about people's lives, not just some, you know, Petri dish.
Right, exactly. But
should I
think,
or shouldn't I send my kid to college? You know?
Yeah, and not every kid, obviously. I mean, the folks who are not, they don't have the skills to match the jobs, you know, that goes in both directions. One is, you know, they're not cutting it in college and they're not going to be engineers, and what do they do now? But then there's this other side, like you say, of kids who, you know, could be doing something more that requires more education, and they don't have those opportunities either.
And I think there's a national movement toward this. I know Mike Rowe, who's the host of Dirty Jobs on cable.
Oh, yeah,
I can't
that's
remember.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he's talked about this as an idea of, let's stop talking about college for everybody, because college is not for everybody. And if you don't go to college, what can you do? And there's a whole world of opportunities for people who don't want to go to college, can't afford to go to college. College is not the right fit for them. And so I think it's interesting to hear a governor talk about this when college has so long been the focus of so many conversations about what happens after high school.
Well, no matter what, though, when you look at the statistics today, still college degree holders, whether or not they pursue a career and what they had the degree in, the bottom line is statistics don't lie when it comes to that. You're more likely to have a job if you have a college degree than you are if you don't.
And you're going to make more money over the course of your career. I think it's like $1 million more that you'll make over the your working lifetime if you have a college degree.
Well, and you're going to dumb down, potentially dumb down the state in terms of the international stage as well. If you know, we can all find these jobs here and then perhaps not be able to compete when, you know, it comes to other countries and other states.
From Sean on Facebook, he writes, I thought it was interesting when he said that jobs save marriages and make kids better off. While that might be true, many Ohioans are working themselves into the ground just to make ends meet, and that also destroys families, or can. And while he's right, employment is better in Mahoning Valley, it is hard to point to something he's done as governor for that to happen. It has to do with a general national economic turnaround. And an email from Jennifer, she writes, this is the first State of the State I've ever listened to. I listen on the radio at work. And I have to say, I cannot stand his style of public speaking. It is so disorganized, erratic, and unprofessional that I found myself cringing all the way at the way he phrased things and the shout outs. What is he, 16? You know, as soon as it was over with, one thing I heard House Speaker of the House, Batchelder, say, that was great. You know, so people had different impressions of the same exact speech.
Well, the Democrats said that was terrible, and the Republicans said that was great. It is interesting to hear from everyday Ohioans who aren't used to the Kasich style. It is hard to follow, and he does do a lot of these shout-outs where, I mean, he's typical, in general, he likes to talk, he's a storyteller, and he drops a lot of names. That's part of his style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I,
Julie,
I forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry, Julie, I interrupted.
Okay, we have not talked about the broadband. Yeah, that was really,
moment of wow, that's news. I guess that was the moment of wow, that's news.
Yeah, let's tell us about the $10 million total, though, that which is an absolute drop in the bucket, but what the heck, it's a drop.
Well, and how many broadband initiatives have we been through mm-hmm. so far? I was a little right. surprised, and I truly today I need to ask more questions on this because it says that it's going to extend these super high speeds to urban areas.
What's the point of?
And yeah, my impression was always our urban areas have enough supply and demand in these areas that they have the network, and that it was really rural and Appalachian areas that needed it.
Hard to get to, yeah.
But so I don't know.
I don't think that this is really aimed at the consumer market. It's more for hospitals, universities, some private sector. They're going to see if they'll open it up so businesses could get on Ornet. Ornet is it's the Ohio Academic Resources Network, and right now they can move data at 10 gigabytes per second. They would invest $10 million and eventually be able to move data at 100 gigabytes per second. This would be something that something like LexisNexis, which is just south of Dayton, it's a huge data company. And if they were able to access this, this is something that might be very appealing to them. And the governor mentioned LexisNexis in his speech last night. It says that, they could transmit 300,000 x-rays in just 1 minute. So you could see how hospitals who were perhaps doing sharing of data or researchers who are collaborating from far-flung areas that they would be able to transmit things a lot more easily.
Well, were there any elements in this for rural areas, though? Because that is...
Where it may be...
where there's the most need.
Right. Well, when you look at the map that was provided with this, which, again, radio folks, sorry, it's got a lot of the cities. It's got the major cities that we're used to, Columbus, okay. Cleveland, Cincinnati, Akron, Youngstown, Toledo, Dayton, and then Athens. But beyond that, the smaller cities, the Zanesvilles and Cambridge and some Marietta, some of these areas are not really listed as being areas that would get a lot of this enhanced 100 gigabyte network.
Again, this is. I don't think it's marketed toward the consumers and the households.
It's
and
the big
rest of it.
Users.
It's not for your smartphone. It's for your.
It may be a redistribution of the broadband money that we're spending.
It may not even be new money.
That's a question. I don't know. I don't know.
We don't know
about that.
Is he going to? He's been to Steubenville now, and he said, well, of course, now it's going to be a competition every year to see where he goes because he says he likes this and he wants to do it. In fact, Bob Taft, former Ohio Governor Bob Taft, said yesterday he was kicking himself that he didn't think of this when he was in office.
Bill Cohen talked to Dick Celeste a couple of days ago who had said that it wasn't a bad idea. Ted Strickland has supposedly said it wasn't a bad idea. But the question is, too, I know that there's a Democratic state lawmaker who's drafting a bill that would require the state of the state to be delivered in the state house. Now, again, it's a Democratic lawmaker who's doing this, but there were some Republicans who voted against this. So who knows? I don't know, if they will try to lure him back to the state house. I think a lot of lawmakers would like it to be there, but you're right. It could end up being a competition. Where is he going to go next?
Here's an email from Bob. He said, I was surprised that the governor didn't emphasize the fact that in some local government units are starting to talk about the consolidation of certain functions in order to save money. This is something that he and the Republican legislator said that balancing the budget with a lot of local sacrifice was designed to accomplish. Did he mention local governments? And I have to say, when I talked on Columbus on the Record last weekend, I predicted he would, because Holly Zachariah at the Dispatch just wrote a two-story package on Union County and what they were doing there to consolidate. Did he say? I didn't hear that either yesterday. Nothing. Nada.
Zilch.
Huge deal for him, though, I thought. The consolidation issue.
Right. And I think the fact that he took it out to the people, if you will, and took it out of the state house and to one of the counties, you would think he would have made some local government references.
But no.
And again, I thought he was going to Wells Academy to sort of talk about K-12 education, and it really got kind of glossed over. It wasn't real extensive. And And basically he said, I'm coming to Steubenville because, you know, Wells is this really good school and I wanted to shine a spotlight on it. But also, Steubenville's like my hometown, kind of like I like it here.
I came because I wanted to come here.
Just right. The other side of the river, and he grew up in Pennsylvania, of course.
Yeah, he grew up in McKees Rocks, which I think is fairly close to Steubenville.
He talked a lot about ethnics at the beginning, and I wasn't sure what he was talking about there.
I think he was talking about, you know, the ethnic populations of some of those
small towns along the Ohio River.
Small towns, and, you know, you've got that whole region of the country, which includes where he grew up as well as Youngstown and all that. He's talking about immigrants who are now not immigrants anymore, but through the generations they came to
descendants
those areas.
Of immigrants.
Right.
Right, and he's from a Croatian family.
Mm-hmm.
Kasich.
I am wondering, though, where he's thinking for next year. I mean, he made it pretty clear in
how
the speech.
How do you beat
that,
Steubenville?
Well, Ashtabula? Oh. you know, it's challenging to try to take a production like that on the road. I mean, I tweeted out a picture yesterday of some of the equipment that needed, and that was just some of the equipment.
They just left the flag there, he said.
Yeah, there's the flag. It's a tremendous production to bring that on the road, and it's not free. And so I'm just wondering where the next place might be.
Statewide office holders weren't there by and large, or were they?
Dave Yost was the only statewide elected official who was there.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court
was
not there.
No, they had arguments that had been scheduled long before, so they weren't there. Most state lawmakers were there. They had to be there for there to be a quorum.
Right.
So we saw most state lawmakers there. I'm trying to think of anybody that I expected to see there that wasn't, and nobody comes to mind. So, you know, he got a pretty good turnout, I think, in terms of, you know, what he was hoping for.
But it does tend to be we have a picture from years ago of, you know, Ken Blackwell, Betty Montgomery, and Jim Petro, who were all running for governor that year.
That was a good year.
In a big hug, you know, at the State of the State. And it tends to be sort of a congenial bringing the parties together, bringing all the people together for state government. And it really, that was somewhat fractured through the move, I think.
We're out of time. Flew by. Thanks so much for joining us. Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau.
Thanks.
And also Laura Bischoff with the Columbus Statehouse Report Bureau for the Dayton Daily News. Laura, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here, as always.
And Julie Carr-Smythe, Associated Press Statehouse Correspondent. Julie, glad you could make it.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.